Hi, this is Dr. Mike Chupp, and you are listening to CMDA Matters, the weekly podcast of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. Well, if you've been listening in recently, you've heard me talking many times about the upcoming 2023 CMDA National Convention. Here at CMDA, we are so looking forward to this year's convention for many reasons, and including some new events that we've added to the schedule, our dynamic speaker lineup, and much more. One reason I'm looking forward to the convention, which will be held April 27th through the 30th, is our special guest for our Saturday evening banquet. We will be joined by the 20th Surgeon General of the United States, Dr. Jerome Adams. Dr. Adams gave both Jeff Barrows and myself a few minutes of his time not too long ago to tell us how he became the U.S. Surgeon General, and then soon after found himself in such a critical public health role during the global COVID-19 pandemic. He also gave us a brief preview of what he will be sharing with us at the upcoming convention. It's fascinating to hear Dr. Adams' personal reflections on his public service as the first anesthesiologist to become Surgeon General. So let's jump right into our recent conversation. Well, I am delighted today on CMDA Matters to have a guest on the program that I literally have been working for 6 years to get here with us today, and that is Dr. Jerome Adams. Jerome did his undergraduate training in biochemistry and psychology at the University of Maryland, got a master's degree in public health with a focus on chronic disease prevention from the University of California, Berkeley, and then went on to medical school at my alma mater, Indiana University School of Medicine, and loved Central Indiana so much that he stayed on board in Indianapolis and did anesthesia training there, finishing in 2006. Several years later, he had the privilege and the honor to become the Indiana State Health Commissioner from 2014 to 2017. And then he was invited to become the 20th U.S. Surgeon General under the Trump administration from 2017 to January 2021. And that's when I first became familiar with Dr. Jerome Adams. Even though he was a Hoosier, I had not heard of him until he made it to Washington, D.C. So, Dr. Jerome Adams, just want to thank you for taking time out of your schedule to join us today on CMDA Matters.
So glad to be here with you. Looking forward to the conversation today and looking forward to speaking to the CMDA members in just a few weeks. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, that's right. Jerome's referring to our national convention that's just across the Ohio River from downtown Cincinnati, and he will be the featured speaker at our Saturday evening banquet this year. And I've also invited today Dr. Jeff Barrows, our Senior Vice President of Bioethics and Public Policy. Welcome, Jeff, fresh off the jet from Israel.
Thanks, Mike. Glad I had a good night's sleep last night, and I'm ready to go.
Okay. Well, Dr. Adams, you worked your way through medical school at IU and then an anesthesia residency. So can you tell our listeners, were you thinking public health and community health all through that anesthesia training? Or I'm pretty sure you were focused on making sure patients had a good experience in the operating room.
A lot of my work before I decided to go into anesthesiology was related to public health and public policy. I got my MPH at Berkeley when I was in between my second and third years of medical school. And went back and forth to the state legislature and to Washington, D.C., frequently arguing on behalf of policies that I thought would create greater opportunities for health for folks. And so anesthesia is odd. I was the first anesthesiologist to serve as Surgeon General.
Sure.
Because many people don't see the link between anesthesia and public health. But number one, when you're trying to encourage someone to be healthy, you often have to have the right message delivered in the right way at the right time. People are rarely more likely to be open to health information than when they're about to have a baby, or when their loved one is in the ICU, or when they're about to undergo heart surgery or surgery for their cancer. And so it's a real touch point that I think we underappreciate. Interestingly enough, there was a survey done in regards to smoking cessation, and most doctors who were surveyed said that they didn't think it was appropriate to counsel patients to quit smoking perioperatively because they had plenty of other stuff to worry about. And then they actually surveyed the patients, and the patients said they were shocked that more doctors and health professionals didn't tell them to stop smoking when they were coming in for surgery. And the three of us all know that now there's plenty of evidence out there that suggests that your outcomes, both acutely and chronically from a surgical procedure, are much more likely to be positive if you quit smoking during the perioperative period. So that's just one example of utilizing that touch point. And I counsel all my patients on smoking cessation when they come into the operating room. I'm still a practicing anesthesiologist. I was in the operating room yesterday. And then finally, I think that God puts you in places at particular times for a reason. Mm-hmm. And while I was the first anesthesiologist to serve as Surgeon General, I would argue there's probably no one better than an anesthesiologist to help counsel the public about the use of fentanyl and morphine and Dilaudid.
Absolutely.
And naloxone. And one of the things I was most known for when I was Surgeon General was putting out a naloxone advisory. It's actually something that I've administered quite often in my professional practice. And even most doctors can't tell you that they've administered naloxone to someone and watched them recover from an overdose, even if it's an iatrogenic overdose, if you will, in the hospital setting. So all that said, I had been thinking about public health and public policy throughout my career and really looked to try to weave it into my anesthesia work. And I'm quite proud to be the first anesthesiologist to have been Surgeon General.
Well, Dr. Adams, let's with that introduction, let's start at the very beginning with how you became aware that you were going to be the U.S. Surgeon General. Was that through a phone call, or were you called to Washington for a meeting? So if you could just take us a little behind the scenes, I think it'd be interesting for all our members to learn how that came to happen.
It's interesting. As Dr. Shrupp mentioned, I was Indiana State Health Commissioner prior to becoming Surgeon General. And the person who appointed me to become Indiana State Health Commissioner was then Indiana Governor Mike Pence. And so when Governor Pence became Vice President Pence, I knew that there was a chance that I would be asked to help out the new administration in some way, shape, or form. Didn't know what that was going to look like, but I actually flew out to New York in November after the election when it was chaos out there. I mean, and it was chaos. And, you know, folks remember TV cameras everywhere. They had barricades all around Trump Tower. I remember walking into Trump Tower for my interview and my phone starts ringing, and it's my mother-in-law from Bluffton, Indiana, who's calling me, and she says, "I see you on the TV." And you know, the CNN had this constant video of who was going in and out of Trump Tower, and so went in, talked to the president-elect at the time about different roles in government. And again, that was November after the election. I didn't hear anything from anyone again until July of the next year. And I was in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, on vacation with my family. And we were literally getting out of the car and getting ready to go go-kart riding when the phone rings, and it was a undisclosed number. And, you know, what's interesting is I usually don't answer those because it's usually a telemarketer. Mm-hmm. But something told me you probably need to answer this call.
Good thing.
And I answered the call, and it was Vice President Mike Pence. And he said, "Hey, Jerome, it's Mike Pence." For those of you who are familiar with him, he is just a very warm person. He treats you like you're one of his own family. And he said, "Hey, Jerome, it's Mike Pence. How are you doing?" And I said, "I'm doing well, sir. How can I help you?" He said, "Well, how would you like to be the next Surgeon General?" And I said, "Well, if you think that's an appropriate role for me, then I would be honored to serve." And that's the short version of how I found out that I was going to be nominated to be U.S. Surgeon General. And what's interesting about that is that I think it's fair to say that we were and continue to be in a politically contentious time. And there were a lot of people who weren't very happy about Donald Trump being elected president. But at the time, I was lauded as a bipartisan pick. And I was one of the fastest officials nominated by the Trump administration to go from nomination to confirmation. Mm-hmm. And many people were held up for months and some people years before they were confirmed, and many were never confirmed. For me, I was nominated in July. I had my confirmation hearing in August, and I was confirmed by the Senate in September. And so it was a pretty quick route after I was nominated, but it was quite a long slog from when I first thought I might be offered some sort of role to when the phone finally rang.
So, Jerome, when you started in the position of Surgeon General, your stated goals were addressing mental health challenges and the opioid epidemic. And of course, this was in late 2019. And then something came on the scene early in 2020 that was unexpected. So your focus had to shift to the developing COVID-19 pandemic. So do you remember a time or a specific meeting when you realized that COVID-19 was going to change everything, and especially the fact of your job as Surgeon General, so with the onset of the global pandemic?
One of the challenges of being Surgeon General is that everybody wants you to make their top priority your top priority, and there's only one of you. And so it really is interesting how different Surgeons General have picked different issues that they chose to lean into. For me, I had very personal family experiences and professional experiences with what back then was a opioid epidemic that America was just starting to come to grips with. That was one reason I chose to focus on mental health and substance misuse. But another reason is something I mentioned earlier, and that's that we were in an incredibly politically contentious time. And the opioid epidemic and the need to address mental health was an issue that I found had bipartisan support. And so I could go to Republican states and I could go to Democratic states and be welcomed because unfortunately, everyone, whether they lean right or lean left, now knows someone who's suffered from substance use disorder. And unfortunately, you can hardly meet someone now who doesn't know someone who's died of an opioid overdose.
Right.
So that was my focus and really leaned into that. But as you mentioned, end of 2019, beginning of 2020, we started to hear rumblings about this virus in China. And what's interesting is there's all this talk right now about origins and about who knew what when and why didn't people react sooner. But every year we have some virus that pops up and we have to decide, okay, do we pull the fire alarm? This year it's H5N1, you know, the bird flu that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. But every year there's some variant, some new strain of the flu that pops up. And so it's actually not surprising that it took a while for people to come to grips with the idea that this one was going to be serious. Another problem that we had, quite frankly, was that China wasn't very forthcoming with information to help us understand the threat that this virus posed as early as they could have. And that really challenged our response. But to answer your question very directly, the moment the U.S. came to grips with the fact that this was going to be a global pandemic was right about the time of the year that we're at right now. It wasn't in January. It wasn't even in February. It was March 11th when the Oklahoma City Utah Jazz basketball game got canceled. After that basketball game got canceled, it forced the entire United States to say, hey, this is serious. Because again, every year it seems like public health is crying wolf about some new virus threat or Ebola, you know, and is it going to make its way from wherever it's bubbling to the U.S.? There's all Marburg. There's always something, and it always seems like it fizzles out. And so we sound like we're the boy that cried wolf. But never before had any of these caused the canceling of an NBA basketball game, which then rippled into the cancellation of NCAA March Madness. Mm-hmm. And the Final Four was supposed to be in Indianapolis that year. I actually still have the hard tickets that were sent to me. I was supposed to go to that Final Four, and it got canceled. So I feel like I got cheated out of that one by COVID. But unfortunately, we all got cheated out of a lot more than a Final Four game. But it's fascinating to think that we couldn't get the country and policymakers and even a lot of people in the health community to take this seriously until a basketball game got canceled.
I bet we could spend the next couple of hours talking about COVID-19 and your involvement as the Surgeon General, which was, I saw you on television quite frequently speaking with the media and with the American public. I also got to be on the receiving end, something that I think was a new initiative that came out of the White House, a faith-based leaders phone call. And I got to listen, and you were one of those, along with Debbie Birx, I believe, who would talk with faith-based leaders. I thought it was a very powerful way to communicate directly with us, including myself at CMDA. But I want to get to the legacy and the position of Surgeon General. Many of our listeners who've been CMDA members for a long time will remember one of our greats that was one of our members, Sievert Koop. And I got to see a TED Talk that you gave in which you held up a packet of cigarettes and said, here's the Surgeon General's warning on this, that this is risky. So are there other, Sievert Koop, other Surgeon Generals that you look back to and say, wow, what a legacy and made a big difference in public health in America?
Well, fantastic question. And I'll give you the straight answer, because I've given some long and winding answers before. I love to give people the context, the background to some of these stories. But the straight answer is David Satcher. David Satcher was the first African-American male to serve as Surgeon General. So he truly blazed the trail for me. And right now, there are fewer Black males going into medicine today than what there were 40 years ago. So that, I think, highlights even more so how significant it is to be an African-American male to rise to the level of Surgeon General. And Dr. Satcher is someone who worked for both Republican and Democratic administrations. So the position of Surgeon General has become, unfortunately, highly politicized through no fault of the individuals who were in those roles. And now, you know, the prior Surgeon General, Dr. Murthy, who was before me, was fired by the Trump administration. And when they came on board, and I was fired by the Biden administration when the Biden administration came on board. And I expect that the cycle will continue. Dr. Satcher actually worked across Republican and Democratic administrations during his time as Surgeon General. And he also is the only Surgeon General to have also served as CDC director. And so he's someone who I very much look up to and who I still reach out to for counsel when I'm trying to figure out how to navigate politically dicey situations. But again, there's only been 20 in history, and all the living Surgeons General, we all still talk to each other, no matter whether we were appointed by Republican or Democratic administrations. It's a small club, and we all face the challenges of having to cut through the political noise that exists out there and to try to influence behavior. So I would say there's something I've learned from all of the living Surgeons General, whether it's Rich Carmona, who really focused on skin cancer, whether it's Jocelyn Elders, who focused on infant and maternal health, whether it's Regina Benjamin, who focused on obesity and the obesity epidemic that we have in our country. There's something that I took from all of them. But Dr. Satcher is the one who I think really has the most significant legacy in terms of his ability to impact public health over different administrations and in multiple different positions.
Do you ever have a Surgeon General's weekend where you guys all get together and exchange notes? Do you do that?
Well, so what's interesting is, every now and then, and I'd say it happens about once a year, some organization will invite several of us to get together for a Surgeon General's panel, and it will just happen to coincide with our schedules, and people will get together and have a conversation. And it's really good because you end up hearing, again, from people who were part of very different administrations, but you hear many of the same challenges that you face dealing with both internal and external politics. But truth be told, I wish we would do it more, because I think there is power behind the group of us coming together and making statements. Unfortunately, it doesn't happen as much as it could, because we're often seen as being attached to one party or the other, and that makes it difficult.
Well, circling back to COVID, just briefly, when we look at now moving forward, we've got a double threat of both COVID and influenza in the future. And so I know that myself and many of our members are wondering, is there going to be a seasonal concern, and will an ongoing COVID vaccine booster become as common as the annual flu shot?
I think we're at a point now where everyone has wrapped their heads around the fact that COVID is not going away. Whether you believe we are at an endemic point or not, COVID will be endemic, meaning that it's going to be around. And I think that we're going to, just as with any other respiratory virus, see that people are more at risk during the winter season when folks come inside and when they're closer together. I do believe that you will start to see us looking at COVID as being a seasonal risk. And I do think that we will combat that the same way we combat the flu, with a seasonal booster recommendation. What's challenging about COVID is that everyone hoped it would fall into that flu type cadence. It's been shown to be so incredibly contagious that we've seen spikes in summertime. We've seen spikes in spring. It hasn't fallen into that cycle that flu has. But it's also true that we've seen the worst spikes in the wintertime. And again, now, one way or the other, most people do have some baseline exposure to it, which I also think is going to level out those spikes a bit. And so I do feel like the recommendation will be that you get a yearly flu shot and you get a yearly COVID shot, and it will be sometime around September, October, and that'll get us through the worst of when we see spikes. And the rest of the year, we'll see different spikes, but I think we'll be able to get through them because most people will have adequate immunity to prevent severe surges in hospitalization and death. But I want to go back to something that Mike said earlier. I just want to give a shout out to our faith-based organizations out there, because the biggest challenge of the pandemic wasn't the lack of a vaccine. It wasn't the lack of medicines. It wasn't the lack of science. It was the inability to get people trusted information that they could act on to protect themselves. And to your point, Mike, I and others recognized very early on that the faith community was going to be critical to getting messages out to folks about how they could protect themselves. Because in many ways, a congregant will go and get a flu shot because their pastor or their priest or their rabbi says so, even if they won't when the Surgeon General of the United States tells them to. And so there's an influence there. There's a trust. There's a connectivity. And I also think that faith leaders also recognize, as we did, that coming together in worship has mental health benefits, and that anything that we could do to keep people healthy while they gathered, or so that we could end lockdown sooner and that they could gather, was going to be something that they would be in favor of. So it was a great partnership. Mm-hmm. I actually had worked with faith communities prior to the COVID-19 pandemic in regards to the opioid epidemic. And I think it's something we need to do more of in the future. We need to do more partnerships because, again, spiritual health, physical health, mental health are all interrelated.
Well, as we wrap up this time with Dr. Jerome Adams, the 20th Surgeon General, we are excited for the Saturday evening banquet. And I hope that everyone registered for the National Convention is going to stay through Sunday morning so they can hear Dr. Adams. And Dr. Adams has agreed to have a fireside chat with us about that issue that still is plaguing us and killing over 100,000 people a year in America. The numbers continue to climb. It's the heartthrob passion that you went into that position wanting to tackle, Dr. Adams, and that is the opioid epidemic. Just give us a sneak preview of the focus that evening there in Cincinnati.
Well, I think number one, we want to discuss and highlight the fact that the opioid epidemic was around before 2020 and COVID. It got worse during the pandemic, and we still aren't doing enough to adequately address it. One of the things that, we'll absolutely get into is one of my passions, and that's combating stigma. I really often, again, think about the Bible and how there was no one who Jesus wouldn't break bread with,
right,
wouldn't sit down with, wouldn't welcome into his home and his environment. Too often, we allow stigma about substance use disorder to prevent us from living up to our Christian ideals. I spent a lot of my time as Surgeon General and as Indiana State Health Commissioner trying to combat stigma by sharing my own family's stories of their struggles with substance use disorder. And we'll talk a little bit about that during our conversation also. But then, this being a medical crowd, I think it's also important that we highlight that recovery is possible and that there are evidence-based ways to address addiction that ultimately will give people a good chance at recovery. And then the final thing that I think is important is that we need to realize that it's not just about the medical aspects, as I mentioned earlier, but there are mental health, there are emotional, there are spiritual aspects to being successful in recovery. And there are many successful faith-based recovery programs. And I think a lot of their success comes because you give people who are lost purpose and meaning. Mm-hmm. And so those are just some of the topics that we'll talk about. But it's really, in summary, about taking a complex and national crisis and trying to figure out how we all as individuals can lean into doing our part to create environments where fewer people become prey to substance use disorder in the first place, that people who are suffering feel like they can come forward and ask for help, and that we then on the back end can provide adequate treatment and recovery services for people when they do ask for help.
Well, it's that critical aspect of spiritual care that you mentioned there that motivated us at CMDA to develop an addiction medicine section. Those of our members who care deeply about doing whole person care and spiritual care, and heard from a number of them who are doing research in the area that when there was secular colleagues who are not faith-based at all, that those researchers in big places have to admit, we better be careful here. We may come across as advocating for faith in the environment. But it's true, whether it's Alcoholics Anonymous or whatever addiction management, that spiritual care and faith plays a very integral role. So we'll be very interested to hear what you have to say about that and how our members can make even a greater difference than what's been made, because this epidemic doesn't seem to be going anywhere fast, Dr. Adams.
Exactly, exactly. But the flip side is, if we can tackle this, I think it will allow us to address many of the other risk factors out there for other diseases, whether it's suicide or whether it's hypertension or even cancer. There are links between risk factors for substance use disorder and cancer. And so I'm looking forward to the conversation. And I want to thank both you and Jeff for the wonderful conversation we've had today.
Dr. Jerome Adams, thanks for joining us today on CMDA Matters. And April 29th, Saturday evening, we will look forward to what I believe will be a very powerful fireside chat with you.
Thank you so much.
The 2023 CMDA National Convention will be here before you know it. Have you reserved your spot yet? We're joining together in the Cincinnati, Ohio area on April 27th through the 30th because we know the value of fellowshipping and worshiping with other Christians in healthcare. This is the place to find resilience in your life, your faith, and your practice. Our speakers at this premier event for healthcare professionals include Professor Robert George from Princeton University, Dr. Kristen Collier from the University of Michigan, President Emeritus of World Vision, Rich Stearns, and many more. We sold out last year, so don't wait to register. To reserve your spot at this year's convention, Visit natcon.cmda.org.
Well, as an update, our number of registrations topped more than 860 this week, which means that this year's CMDA National Convention will be the largest gathering ever for CMDA. We'd love to reach 1,000 this year, actually. You still have time to register, but don't wait too long. I hear the hotel rooms are filling up fast. So you can visit natcon.cmda.org to register before it's too late. You know, I almost forgot. One of those new events that we've added to the convention this year is a ticketed breakfast with Ryan Bomberger from the Radiance Foundation at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center in Cincinnati, Ohio. That will be on Saturday morning, April 29th. It is a ticketed event with limited seating, so don't forget to purchase your tickets. If you've already registered for the convention, you still have a chance. You can get your ticket for the event. Again, just go to natcon.cmda.org. Near the end of our conversation with Dr. Adams, we spent a few minutes talking about the opioid epidemic. That's actually going to be his main focus during his fireside chat at the convention during our Saturday evening banquet. You briefly heard me talk about CMDA's addiction medicine section, which was formed out of a desire to prevent and treat addiction and transform lives by God's grace, love, and power. As a specialty group of CMDA, the Addiction Medicine Section strives to provide excellent care with compassion in all aspects of addiction management, and that includes whole person prevention and treatment, education, advocacy, empowerment of others, research, church and community partnerships, as well as interprofessional collaboration and support. I want to encourage you to take the opportunity to get involved with this specialty section. If God is calling you to be a leading change agent in this battle against addiction, focused on bringing the hope and healing of Christ to those enslaved in your community, be sure to visit cmda.org/AMS. You know, you also have the opportunity. You can start chatting directly with the leaders of the Addiction Medicine section through our CMDA Go app. And here's Jamie to tell you more.
Have you downloaded the CMDA Go app? If you haven't, then now is your chance. In the CMDA Go app, you can set up your personal CMDA profile, renew your membership, make your dues payments, check out the latest news from CMDA, listen to CMDA Matters and other podcasts, access a variety of downloadable resources, interact with other members through the discussion forums, and join group chats. For more information, visit cmda.org/app. And be sure to visit your device's app store to download it today.
Next week, my guest on CMDA Matters will be one of the most influential voices on constitutional law and first freedoms in America, especially free speech. He's an Ivy League law professor who joined me a couple of years ago for one of the most listened to podcasts ever on CMDA Matters. I will be joined by Professor Robert George of Princeton University, whose basketball team, by the way, has been surprising a lot of people. We won't be talking about March Madness or Princeton's surprising run in the NCAA tournament, but we will be talking about campus free speech, as well as DEI initiatives, and Prof. George's prognosis for conscience freedoms in healthcare in the months and years ahead. As always, if you'd like to suggest a future guest for the podcast, you can just email us using cmdamatters@cmda.org. And if you like the podcast, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and share us on your favorite social media platform. Before we close today, I thought it would be fitting to share CMDA's mission statement because it seems so applicable to our conversation with Dr. Adams. At CMDA, we educate, encourage, and equip Christian healthcare professionals to glorify God. Christian healthcare professionals glorify God by following Christ, by serving with excellence and compassion, by caring for all people and by advancing biblical principles of healthcare within the church and throughout the world. I'm thankful for Christian healthcare professionals like Dr. Jerome Adams, like Dr. C. Everett Koop that I mentioned, Dr. Donna Harrison, Dr. Jeff Barrows, like Dr. Christina Francis, and some of you listening. Truly, the list could go on and on and include thousands of Christians in healthcare who courageously answer God's call to step into the public square and be ambassadors of the great physician, bringing light to dark places where many are suffering, bound with chains of addiction and lost in their sin. And as these Christian healthcare professionals courageously do so, they are bringing the hope and healing of Christ to our world. That's what matters to CMDA, and CMDA matters. We'll see you next week, friends, God willing.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.